The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. Today we are going to be talking about innovation and change in a VUCA world. And my guest is Natasha Wilson, development consultant and marketeer who has a passion for innovation. Natasha, welcome. I have to start with a basic question. What on earth is VUCA?
Oh, thank you, Kiran. I'm so happy to be here. So VUCA is a really interesting acronym that was initially used probably during the Cold War in the States, and is to define a volatile, uncertain, ambiguous and complex landscape in which we live and operate. So you can imagine with the pandemic and other, you know, challenges that we face with in our businesses and our jobs, I think we definitely are living in a VUCA world. Would you agree, Kiran?
I agree with you. I first came across this term about five or six years ago. And at that stage, we were at sort of 2016, 2017. It seemed quite uncertain then. And yeah, a pandemic since then has really made it uncertain. Okay, so it's volatile, it's uncertain, it's complex, it's ambiguous. What effect does that have on us?
Well, huge, because it's very difficult for us to plan. So whether we are leading organizations or working in our specific roles, we have to be very agile, very good at adapting and anticipating change and embracing change. So, you know, we've had, at you know, for many years, the chance to be able to work in quite environments that were not changing so much. And this is so different now. So in a way, you know, in marketing and other roles that we are taking on, we have to deal with this. And there are different ways how we can react. We can just survive. We can manage to adapt, which to a certain extent we've done with a pandemic when we had to work from home or use hybrid ways of working. And we still try to navigate this change. And businesses are trying to find the right way to do that. You know, we've had the chance to have, you know, vaccines and have a bit more freedom of movement. But also we can seize the opportunity and think about how we can innovate. So I'd like to talk about even the way the vaccine, you know, has been developed so quickly. There was definitely a shift in terms of the process of innovation. Where, you know, people, amazing amount of people, talented researchers and different organizations got together and managed to fast track the clinical trials, the regulatory processes to achieve in less than 12 months, you know, a vaccine that, you know, originally would have taken years. So I think in a way the pandemic has forced us to work differently and to think about what innovation means in our workplaces, but also in ways how we deal with further challenges like global, you know, pandemic.
Yes, the vaccine's a very interesting example, isn't it? Because when you hear back how the Oxford academics started, they actually pretty much knew at the beginning what they wanted to do. It was a question of then getting the trial. I think they talk about it was almost a weekend, the first weekend that they came up with it. But then you need all this collaboration. So is collaboration going to be key in VUCA?
Absolutely. Collaboration and developing networks, you know, at all levels of the organization to help you get the right skill set and the right ideas and thinking outside the box, you know, not thinking about, oh, this is what we've done for years, so we get to keep continuing doing that or fixing what is broken. It's really trying to think outside the box and innovating to bring, you know, benefits to people who are working in the organization, but also to your different stakeholders. So the vaccine is obviously the ultimate example, but many organizations have been successful at doing that and bringing, you know, increased convenience. I mean, the other thing I'm thinking about, of course, is if you think about Amazon Prime or, you know, other ways where you could get access to goods and services when we had lockdowns. It was incredible in how it helped us to carry on. I am guilty, I think, of being a bit too, happy to use this particular method, and I'm slowly going back to shops in the main streets. But it has been extremely convenient. So the innovation doesn't have to be only about the product itself. It could be about the processes we use. It could be about making things easier for customers or anyone, you know, to connect or to access goods and services, for instance.
Okay, so we're looking at ways of adapting, and you said you either survive or you adapt. Is it really one or the other? I mean, what did you mean by an organization just surviving?
And that's an interesting question. I think sometimes it's about our attitude to change, Kieran. I don't know if, at a human level, how we are, honest in how we're dealing with change. So there's been a lot of work around this and about the different emotions that are connected to change. And most of us will resist because unless we have a vision of what the future will look like, you were talking about the vaccine and what they had in mind, it's very difficult to take people on board and to encourage them to change. There's a leap of faith, and often we're more comfortable as human beings to deal with things that are not quite right and difficulties because we're so fearful of what else could happen. So I think it's really a mindset. It's not just about having the ideas and the skill set. It's also a mindset and a vision. So I'm very lucky. I work with people who have huge amount of drive and vision in different environments, but including research. And this is what is also empowering others to go along with it and to find new solutions. So maybe that's where the change is between the survival versus innovating is also our ability to agree that it might be a little bit uncomfortable, that we will have to go through a phase where we are looking for different solutions and we might not get there straight away. But there is this vision and this drive to actually look at what we do in a very different way and open up possibilities. So if you think about it, we all are relying so heavily on technology and mobile phones. And imagine what was a life like beforehand. Imagine, do you remember going back to fax machines or to telex or whatever it was, the technology that we used? The power we have with that technology, being connected now and having the chance to do this podcast when we're all, remote in our own offices, is incredible. But if you had asked people whether they would have wanted that, they would have probably said no, because they couldn't imagine what it would help them with. So that forward thinking and that ability to have a mindset that talks and think about the future and the benefits is really critical, I think, to organizational growth and to the way we develop as well in our own professions.
So where do you think that mindset and vision comes from? Is it only ever have to come from the top, or can it come from anybody at any stage in their career?
This is a really good question, Kieran. And in my experience, I think it comes from very different places, but it has to be at one point synchronicity. So, leadership and vision is really important to empower others, to listen to others, and to make it possible for people to come up with ideas and solutions. And at the same time, recruiting the right people and allowing them to thrive in their environment. So there's a lot of work, being done about equality and diversity, but there's also something that is more important or as important. It's about inclusion. So you may have the right people, but if there aren't the processes or the trust or the space for your employees to come up with new ideas and solutions, and that can be at a very technical level as well. I was looking back at some of the tools that we can use, for instance, in communication. And I was just amazed at the thousands of software and tools that are available for us to see how we connect with our different stakeholders and how we measure, the results of our communication, for instance. And this has changed quite drastically. But again, this can only be used and in a positive way if you have the space for people to be able to take initiatives and to come up with new solutions and suggestions on how they might want to do their job in a more effective way. So I'm really interested to see what you think, Kieran, but in my view, it's a combined approach. You need a good balance where innovation is welcome at the top and leaders are embracing it, but also there are, you know, areas of expertise and there is space within the organization for people to come up with the solutions and embed them in their practices.
I thought your comment about inclusion and having the processes in place to allow that is really important. I, very early on in my career, I was working in an organisation where we had a new, very dynamic CEO who made loads of changes. But one of the things he came up with was a just do it strategy. Well, mm-hmm. a just do it strategy. You've got a bright idea. Just do it. Fantastic. I mean, for those of us that were early stage career and wanted to make changes, it was wonderful. The trouble was we all went off and made different changes in different uh-huh. directions, and sometimes we crossed over each other and we ended up with some very, very confused customers. And I think that was the danger. There wasn't the processes in place to allow you to do that in a logical way.
Yes, and it's interesting. That goes back to this alignment. I was reading a book recently about this, and I just can't remember the name of the author, unfortunately, but it was about how we align all the efforts. So that has to be linked to a strategy, you know, to saying we'll use innovation maybe in certain areas, whether it's product, processes, internal communication, whatever it is, new product development. But there has to be, I think, a way to prioritize and so people work in the same direction. So I get absolutely what you're saying, Kieran. And I've been in organizations like that as well, where there was a lot of power and a lot of ideas and excitement, especially if you work for startups, for instance, as well. But unless you combine that energy together, it can be quite detrimental because it's patchy. And I think people get a bit, out of breath as well. You know, you need to make sure that there are results that you can measure and see how it's affecting your business or, you know, your organization positively. Otherwise, I think I always compare it, you know, between the marathon and the sprint. It's like work is more like a marathon. You have to keep having the right energy to finish and to carry on and see the results. And so there's a balance between that. Yeah, absolutely.
So I was interested, you talked about emotions around change. And I don't know what you're noticing, but I'm certainly noticing there's an awful lot of emotion around at the moment. I think, you know, it's been 2 years of a pandemic. We're all exhausted and there's lots of things we're still not certain about. So are there models and things that we can do to look at emotions around change?
Yes. So there are, you know, a lot of different frameworks that you can have a look at. Initially, the work was carried out from a psychologist who was looking at grief and specifically how people manage grief. So there's been a lot of similarities between, you know, experience of grief and then change within organizations or in our life in general. And this has been very helpful. But I think with every framework that you might look at, it's like people not going through the same, in a way, the same, you know, types of emotions at the same time. So it's a very personal matter. And I think sometimes we tend to judge where we feel like, oh, well, you know, we've given time for people to deal with a change, whether it's a restructure, for instance, or a merger, or people may have to be made redundant because of the economic climate, or there are other ways that, you know, force people to change. Like the typical thing as well is like changing building and people's desk having to be decided where they should be. And that can be extremely stressful for employees, for all of us, working from home versus hybrid or being asked to go back to the office. All these changes may impact us very differently. So what I would say is that we have to allow for people to react, and the pace of their reaction may be different. And we have to allow for that. There isn't this kind of like perfect formula which says it will take 3 weeks for people to deal with change. So I would say it's having a process that makes a big difference so that there's constant communication and there's also very supportive, you know, managers or supportive teams where people have the chance to air some of their concerns and they feel listened to. And for some people, they react much quicker. They get from maybe like a shock or denial to more of appreciating the change and understanding the benefit of that position. And the work I do with some of the leaders or people who are running large groups, the way they are handling that is that they are becoming more aware of their own emotions. So we go into the emotional intelligence, you know, where you understand how you are switching state of emotions. So I think there's a big parallel between innovation and change and innovation and the kind of like whirlpool of emotions. And we have to get better at dealing with this because, as you say, we still have a lot of uncertainty. We're still in a VUCA world. So maybe that's what we need to do, embrace change and embrace the emotional upheaval that goes with it and get better at managing it.
So what else can companies do in this VUCA world? I mean, I've encouraged you to talk about the emotional side, and I think it's really interesting. But what other frameworks and structures should we companies be putting in this very difficult environment?
So do you remember, Kieran, many years ago, when we look at strategic plans, we had plans that were 5-10 years plans? I don't know if you remember.
Oh, that was a long time ago, wasn't it? Yes.
Yes. So now when you discuss this with organizations, and it can be functional, you know, plans or more strategic plans, let's say that the time frame has narrowed quite a lot. So maybe that's about that. It's having, you know, systems to make sure that you have additional information, the right data at the right time. So there's a lot more around having scenario planning options that are shorter timescales. You can still have a vision and ambition that might be still 3 to 5 years, but the operational or the shortest strategic plan is probably 1 year now. I would say 1 year probably maximum, with a lot of alterations on a 3 months to 6 months basis, depending on the type of market in which you operate or the type of organization you are. It is different if you're, for instance, maybe a charity or if you have funding, from the public sector or other types of funding, because then the cycles are slightly different. But that ability to being really aware of what is going on in the marketplace and also what's happening in your organization. We also know that, you know, as new employees are coming into or new, you know, people are coming into the workforce, they have different expectations and there's a big need for purpose. We've been, you know, told that's the case, and younger generation needs more purpose. They want to know why they're working and how their work and the organization is linked to bigger impact. So it could be social impact, economical impact, could be environmental impact, including climate change, of course. So maybe there's the two things that needs to happen. More agility, more access, you know, to data that is relevant, that will help you update your plans, and the ability to link what we do with a wider purpose to attract the right talent. That's what I see. But I'm sure, Kieran, you have also a lot of other thoughts on that, and maybe we should write a book.
So coming back to structures and processes, which is, I'm probably pushing because I know it's not really my strongest of areas. There's something around R&D and new product development. You talked about Amazon Prime, getting it right and making things easy. We talked about collaboration and creating things like the vaccine. Where does that fit into this changing world?
I think it's about adapting to changing needs. We, you know, in the Western world, mainly at this moment in time, maybe have lost the idea of patience, and we want to have access to data, access to people, access to goods and services in the most convenient manner. Interestingly enough, I think, you know, there might be a switch that needs to happen if we also look at the impact on the environment. You know, so there's this idea of having more localized food production, for instance, now, and that may impact how we access food and how we connect with food. There's a lot of things around research and innovation in that area. But this ability to think about your stakeholders and try to add value has been driving innovation. Sometimes probably for the benefit of all, and in other times not so. I think in the food retail, I know that, you know, we've had a big encouragement to shop online, and it was very handy and fantastic for many groups who could not leave their house due to the pandemic and being, you know, probably vulnerable to virus. But it also has had huge pressure on retail outlets on how they are delivering this food and making sure they do a good service. So now there's an impetus for some food retail outlets to encourage you and give you vouchers to go back shopping in the shops. So we're seeing a reverse, you know, impetus here. So, you know, innovation can be driven for very different reasons. When we looked at the vaccine, it was about global health, and it was, you know, an amazing collaboration between very different types of organizations, including governments, to try to make this work. In other areas, such as in businesses, it's probably to drive, you know, increased revenue and potentially profits. As I mentioned before, this have to be connected with a wider purpose and encouraging, you know, your employees, your connected stakeholders to do something that will benefit, you know, their organizations and also a wider purpose. We can feel that and see that where, you know, corporate social responsibility is becoming higher on the agenda. Maybe the big, you know, what we call the GAFA, the big, you know, technology companies, might, you know, drive innovation in our life, but they might also have a broader impact in some of the global challenges. So I'm hoping, and I'm a bit of a cautious optimist, that it will play up for the better and it will, you know, improve both how we live, but also try to solve some bigger solutions. But the future will tell. So maybe that's why these podcasts are helpful. Maybe this is the way we can all try to make a difference in some way in whatever we do.
I think that's a lovely call to action to end on. But your call to action very much seems to be collaboration and network, and we all have a part to play.
Yes, Kieran, exactly. And I know it can be hard because we can feel overwhelmed. But this is something that we all need to work on, that there are ways we can influence what we do in our organizations, in our roles. And sometimes we can do it, you know, outside our work as well, but there are definitely options. So keep an eye out and enjoy the journey.
Natasha Wilson, thank you very much indeed for your time and for explaining innovation and change in a VUCA world.
Thank you, Kieran. Lovely to be here.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.